Welcome to episode 2 of Merlin Cast. Today we'll be reviewing season 4, episode 1, The Darkest Hour, part 1. We have some great analysis for all of you, and we feel like we can give you a good show. My name's Aaron Millard.
My name's Courtney Catanella.
And my name's Andrew Bracey.
Alright, we're going to start out with a couple news stories. There wasn't a whole lot of news this week, mainly because these episodes have already aired in the UK, so most of the news sites have already covered them once, and they're not really going to cover them again. But Merlin aired at 10 o'clock on January 6th on Sci-Fi, and that was followed by a very long marathon of Merlin, which I don't know about you guys, but I watched a couple episodes of.
Yep, me too.
Did you guys get a chance to watch?
Yeah, a little bit.
But overall, it was nice to see season 3 again. I think they skipped one episode, if I remember correctly, the Goblin's Gold one, which is probably the least prevalent to the main plot, so they had to fit them all in, and that seemed like the logical one to cut, so I wasn't too upset by that, but
yeah.
I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah,
and
I agree. It was nice to kind of have a refresher on what happened in Season 3, because it's been a while since that was on.
Yeah, definitely. I think, Courtney, you had one other news story for us?
Yeah, I was looking online, and I came upon an article. I actually couldn't really figure out who wrote it, but they said that one of the things that the writers wanted to do with the season of Merlin was to ensure that they wouldn't lose any character development. With most series and shows by the fourth season, the cast is already so set, and the character development is already kind of done, so the cast is kind of set aside, and it's replaced with plot development. But the writers of this season wanted to make sure that they give Arthur's Knights, each of Arthur's Knights and Gwen, a development episode to themselves. So that'll be something interesting to kind of track as the season plays out, because I think we'll get a little special attention to each of the different characters.
Yeah, definitely. And I can think of, even in this episode, some examples of character development. So when we go through it, we'll definitely bring those up, because I really felt there was some good character development in there. And that's really good that they're taking the time to develop these characters more. Because you look at some other TV shows, and after the first season, when they've introduced all their characters and kind of analyzed them, you don't get another chance to really see a whole lot of development in them. So the fact that the writers are really making an effort to continue to develop them is a really good thing. So now we're going to go into our recap of episode 1. What we're going to do is just go through the scenes and talk about them a little bit and see how we felt about them, if there's anything we didn't like, if there's anything we really liked. So I'll get started. The first scene, we see Morgana. Well, at first, she's just a hooded figure, and she's walking down the road, and you see her pulling a cart, and you wonder to yourself, now, what's going on here? And then the Knights of Camelot, led by Sir Leon, not all of them are there, but they come up on her, and they tell her to stop. They ask her where she's going, and she says she's going to the Isle of the Blessed. I don't know about you guys, but I could tell from the voice that it was her. But then she ends up turning around, and they're all shocked to see her because, you know, after the end of season 3, everyone's kind of afraid of her and not knowing when to expect to see her. And when they see her, she kind of just pulls a little magic trick on them and knocks them all out. And then we get a glimpse of Morgos, who is in the cart. In the end of season 3, she got someone used, was it Gaius that used magic on her? That
oh, yeah,
her
I believe,
wall,
yeah.
Or was it Merlin?
I think
I'm pretty
so.
Sure Gaius brought the building down, and that's when Morgana and...
No,
at the end of season
3?
No,
I think...
Yeah.
Wasn't it... Gaius knocked her over, and then... Yeah, Merlin ended up pushing her, and she hit her head on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then Morgana got upset about it and started screaming, and that's when the whole building went down, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So, regardless, to say, Morgos took some damage, some major damage, in season 3. So she was pretty banged up. Half of her face was it looked like it was kind of burned, but she was in bad shape, so it's pretty obvious that she was towards the end of her life. So, The next scene is back at the castle. Everything's going just great. Merlin's preparing for a feast, and he just got Arthur's clothes out of the kitchen where apparently he was drying them. He ends up bumping into Lancelot, and I think Lancelot had some wine on him, and he spilled it all over Arthur's shirt. So then Merlin uses his magic to clean it up a little bit. And Lancelot, of course, is the only knight that knows about Merlin's magic. So
Right.
that was just kind of a hint, I think, for people that
I
might
forgot
not
about
know
that.
that already.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Lancelot already knows. So then we see Merlin go in to help Arthur get dressed, but he's already dressed. And then you have the usual dialogue between Arthur and Merlin. Their joking dialogue, how Merlin's an idiot and how Arthur
Arthur's a
said he could get
brat.
dressed on his own.
Yeah.
But
Yep.
yeah, but then when Arthur turns around, he didn't exactly dress himself properly. So Merlin tries to play it off like Arthur did it right, but he's trying not to laugh. So that was pretty funny. But shortly after that, there's a sad scene with Arthur and Uther, which this is the first time we really see Uther after he's thrown in prison from Morgana and shocked by the whole thing. And he's just really looking like he's in bad shape.
Oh,
He's like horribly, he's not shaved at all, and like he's just sitting there
you can
like
tell
clearly
he's down and
extremely
out.
depressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really sad scene.
And Arthur kind of wants him to like participate in the festivities and everything, but Uther doesn't even say anything. He just kind of stares off into like nothing, and it was pretty sad. But that's like your first hint that Uther really isn't the same person he was before.
Yeah.
The following scene is at the Isle of the Blest. They've arrived there, and Morgana has brought Morgause to the it looks like a big kind of like, I don't know, what would you call it? It's like a big room.
It's like a
A
courtyard kind
big,
of thing, yeah.
yeah, kind of like a courtyard. And there's like kind of like an offering table there, and Morgause goes up on there. Morgana really is not very confident in herself and doesn't
No.
really know exactly how things are gonna go. She's clearly, I think she knows that she needs to sacrifice Morgause, but she's not comfortable with it. They're there to sacrifice her because it's the time of the year where the spirit world and the regular world are at their thinnest, like the layer between them is. So if they do the sacrifice now, they can unleash these terrible creatures, and they will wreak havoc on Camelot. So after Morgause persuades Morgana, Morgana kills Morgause. Then we see the sorceress of the old religion. Her name is
The Calyx?
Courtney, what's her name?
Yeah, it's a, yeah, Calyx.
She shows up and she talks to them and ends up releasing these terrible creatures called the Duraka. I don't know, they're really weird. They kind of remind me of Dementors a little bit from Harry Potter, but
They're spirits of the dead, pretty much.
Yeah.
so basically what you'd see is these like ghosts kind of like screaming. There's a lot of screaming, like sounded like a lot of torturous noises in the background, and then these screaming ghosts would come flying by. And I guess what they do is they suck the soul out of people and they leave them like frozen afterwards. It's really pretty creepy, and the only way they could figure out how to not even kill them but just get them away was using fire. So these creatures are released on Camelot, and you can tell there's going to be some bad news. But we go back to the castle. The feast is going on, and they're all sitting at the table, and Merlin at this time feels what just happened at the Isle of the Blest. He has kind of like a vision of the Calyx, and it really freaks him out. He ends up passing out. It kind of shows his connection to the magical world because he's so connected. He feels everything that just happened, and it really troubles him. So that happens, and everyone kind of gathers around him and is all worried about him. The next day, he talks to Gaius about what happened, and Gaius explains to him what he thinks happened, and he knows that it's bad news because once these things are released, the only way to get rid of them is from a sacrifice of another person. And while they're talking, they get called into the court, and this girl has shown up from outside village. She's obviously a peasant. and she explains that her whole village was destroyed by these creatures that she has a hard time explaining. I think she says like they were there but they weren't, and like she really can't explain what happened. But it becomes clear that
So,
Arthur and the knights need to head out there to investigate.
pretty much they do travel out to the village, and they get there and see, kind of your typical eerie deserted town type thing. And so they do scavenge around. They find a couple dead bodies that look kind of unusual. It almost looks like they've been, frostbit. And so night comes along. Of course, Merlin's on edge. He gets spooked by Gawain at one point. And then right around the middle of the night, Merlin starts hearing these screams and stuff in the bushes. And finally, you see kind of this shifting shape starting to form in front of Merlin, and you see it's one of those Daraka spirits. And fortunately, though, Lancelot, he jumps in the way with a torch and, scares it off, that sort of thing. And so they know what they're dealing with. And by the time the knights return to Camelot, they find that the Daraka are there too in the main walls, and kind of terrorizing the population. And so back in Camelot, in the meantime, you can see things are clearly wrong, and people are dying, and the Daraka are everywhere. And in one scene, you see Percival. He comes across three little children, and he kind of stays behind while the rest of the knights are moving along. He abandons his torch and picks up these three children in his arms, and he's kind of running away. And you see a couple of Daraka coming after him, and fortunately, Elion, being the great brave guy he is, jumps in the way with his torch, scares him off, and they're able to get the children to safety and, survive the rest of the night. Then,
That was the point I just wanted to point out, where I feel like there was some character development for Percival there.
yeah, I
It kind of
definitely
showed
agree.
he's willing to sacrifice himself for some of the citizens of Camelot. It was really a courageous move.
You also see some loyalty out of Elion too, being the loyal comrade he is. And so it's still really it shows how they really work together to help people, that sort of thing. And that'll develop along. And so the next day, because fortunately during the daytime, you don't really see the Draka as much. It's usually during the night where they're out and about. But that's when Merlin kind of confides in Guise how scared he is and how powerless he is to kind of to stop these Draka. His magic won't work, and so he really can't do a whole lot. And now the scene after that, you see Agravain, and so Agravain's been in here so far. You think he's a good enough guy? He's Arthur's uncle, and he's the brother to Arthur's mother, and so he's serving as Arthur's chief advisor. But in this scene, you see that he's actually working for Morgana, because he's kind of vengeful towards Uther and the Pendragon family for the death of his wife. I mean, I'm sorry, his sister. So you can see he's working for Morgana, and so he's reporting back to her, telling her how Camelot is, how things have gone bad, and how Arthur actually intends to sacrifice himself at the Isle of the Blessed in order to save the kingdom. And of course, to Morgana, this is good news. Arthur will be dead, and it'll be a perfect chance for her to take over the kingdom. In the next scene, you see kind of another emotional scene between Arthur and his father. He's saying goodbye to him. He tells him what a great role model he's been, and that sort of thing. And afterwards, he and the knights will head out of Camelot.
Yeah, I mean, there's a scene right after that with Merlin saying goodbye to Gaius, because he's obviously going to go with Arthur, because that's his job. And that kind of parallels Arthur saying goodbye to Uther, because Gaius is really Merlin's father figure, because Merlin did obviously know his father, but only for a short time. So Merlin saying goodbye to Gaius is another really kind of sad moment, even though it feels like he's done it a few times by now. And he says to Gaius that he'd gladly give his life to Arthur to keep Albion safe. So Merlin pretty much knows that Arthur is going to sacrifice himself on the Isle of the Blessed, and he knows that Arthur has to stay alive because that's his destiny, is to keep Arthur safe. And so he would obviously give his life to make that happen. Following that scene with Merlin and Gaius, Morgana has a nightmare about Emrys in which she's kind of, like, stumbling, I think it was. She's stumbling through, looks like a scene after a battle, and there's just kind of dead bodies everywhere, and then she, like, looks up, and Emrys is there, and to her, he's very intimidating, and this kind of signals that he will be her final end, which is true, obviously, according to Arthurian legend. And then after that dream, where Morgana gets really freaked out, Arthur and Merlin go to... Oh, then all of the knights and, obviously, Arthur and Merlin finally arrive at the Isle of the Blessed, and, you know, it's really, really intimidating looking, you know, old castle, very decrepit with the dragon things flying around. And Arthur and Merlin go to get wood so that they have a fire to protect them from the Darakas when it gets dark. But they kind of get swallowed up by the darkness and kind of get lost in the castle, and the knights go after them. You know, brave knights, it's their job description, keep the king safe, or prince safe. But the knights only have one torch, so they're a little bit jumpy, and I noticed that. But, I don't know, it's... I think I'd be freaked out, too. Especially with the screams, they definitely sound like tortured souls. And so Merlin and Arthur end up kind of not hiding, but I guess staying together next to this, like, wall. And they just talk, and they kind of say their final goodbyes. And I believe at one point either Merlin or Arthur says that they feel that they would have been good friends had things turned out differently. So that was a really nice moment. And then in the end, one of the Darakas is about to go after Arthur, and Merlin jumps in the way and takes the blow from the Daraka and seems to die. Yeah.
Yep.
It's a pretty...
Yeah, it's kind of how they leave it.
Yeah.
The only thing, my problem with that is, and they don't do this on sci-fi. You know how when you watch it on the BBC channel, they have the, it says Merlin, and then they show, like, a quick synopsis of the next episode?
Yeah.
I remember when I watched it on BBC, the Merlin, like, supposedly dies, and then right in the recap of the next episode, they show Merlin, like, walking around.
I know.
So, like, it's pretty obvious that he didn't. But with sci-fi, they didn't do that, so... I mean, obviously he's not going to die because he's the main character of the show.
And there's
but,
12 more episodes of the season.
Yeah,
definitely. So we'll go over our overall thoughts. But what we'll do is everyone can go over their overall thoughts of the episode, their favorite scene, and the person, the actor or actress they felt really shine the most. So I'll go first. There's three scenes that really stuck out to me. And I really enjoy this episode overall. I wasn't a huge fan of the Daraka. I feel like it was pretty clear that they were CGI. I think they could have done a little better to make it look more realistic, but I could still get into it. Like, I could still believe it was happening. But the three scenes that really stuck out to me were, the first one was Morgana when she's in her hut and she's sleeping. She's sleeping. She sees the scene where, you know, there's a huge battle that just happened, and a lot of people have theories that this was the battle at Baden Hill, where in Arthurian legend, Arthur and Morgana both die. So, and that's actually another major point for Merlin or Emrys, however you want to say it. So that's what a lot of people's theories are, is that's when that happens. So that'd be cool if it was a little insight into Arthurian legend. So I really enjoyed that scene, and it really did some foreshadowing for what's going to happen in the future. Because, as you guys know, whenever someone has a vision, usually, in this show, it usually comes true. I can't think of very many examples of people having visions that didn't end up coming true. So I feel like that's another thing that's going to happen eventually, and I'm looking forward to that happening. But that brings up another question, and I'm kind of wondering this. How long do you think that Merlin will have to hide his secret of having magic? Because the only time that he can ever use magic in front of Arthur is when he's changed into the old man, which is how Morgana sees him at this battle. So if they're saying that Merlin is an old man at this battle, which, if it truly is the defeat of Morgana, that would mean that Merlin can't reveal his secret at all, even at the end of both Arthur and Morgana's lives. Which would kind of, in my opinion, really suck because everyone's looking forward to when Arthur finds out that Merlin has magic, but go ahead.
Wouldn't that kind of go against Arthurian legend too? I thought, Arthur knew Merlin as Merlin, the wizard, most of the
Yeah.
time. So I think that might be a little inconsistent, but I'm definitely sure that way before then, Merlin will end up revealing himself to Arthur and the rest of the kingdom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
They can definitely figure it out.
Yeah.
It just kind of left me with some questions, but actually, I'm looking forward to getting them answered, so it's okay
Oh yeah.
that they did that. The second scene that really stood out to me was when they have a bonfire going in the old castle, but they know it's not going to be enough wood to get them through the night. When this happens, they know people need to go out and get firewood, but what Arthur does is has everyone draw sticks. And instead of just having his knights do it, he does it himself. So I think this is a big moment just to show how equal Arthur wants his knights to feel they are with him. Because he actually includes himself in this. He doesn't just make his knights go out and do it. He actually make sure that he has a chance of having to get firewood too, which actually ends up happening. And of course, Merlin's gonna stick with him. But I just felt like that really spoke to Arthur's character, and showed how willing he is to lay his life out on the line for his knights. I don't know if you guys felt the same way.
Yeah,
Yeah,
no,
I
I
kind of felt
definitely
like that.
do.
I know it's a little thing, but it really speaks quite a bit in my opinion. Oh, and the third scene was the final scene of this episode. I think a lot of people enjoyed it, just the dialogue between the two of them.
That's what I thought too, yeah. Yeah, me too.
It was one of those rare moments where Arthur actually speaks to Merlin not in a joking way and really tells him that he thinks he's a wise man and that, as you said, they could have been friends in another life. I remember in the finale of season two, when everyone fell asleep, and the two of them were about to fall asleep, and those cursed knights were closing in on them, they had another good dialogue there, and that was a good one too. So I really enjoyed those moments when they get the chance to exchange some really heartfelt thoughts. So that was my third favorite. And then I'd have to say this episode probably my favorite actor would have been, I'd have to say Merlin really in this one, because I felt like he really shined. He had a lot of big moments, and it's very clear that he's going to sacrifice his life for Arthur no matter what. And you can really tell, especially when he's talking to Gaius, that he's not, I mean, it's not what he wants to do, but he knows that it's his destiny to save Albion, so he's willing to do it. It really just kind of shows he's willing to put his life on the line. And I felt like Colin Morgan did a really good job of portraying Merlin. And I feel like through the years he's really become a better actor and he's a lot better at showing emotion. So that was definitely my favorite actor of this episode. So Andrew, if you want to go next, go ahead.
All right, I think as far as my three favorite scenes go, I'd say probably the first one I thought was just the little incident Merlin had just getting Arthur's new shirt cleaned and then getting some wine spilled on it, and you see him walk by Lancelot, and of course Lancelot suggests to him, you're a talented guy, I'm sure he'll figure something out. It kind of it's nothing big, nothing really significant, I don't think, but it kind of just points to Lancelot's a good character. I think he's able to be a good friend and keep a secret from Merlin, and throughout the whole series so far, you've seen of out of him, he's kind of a selfless type guy, really nice, really heartfelt, and I think that's kind of just restating that to open the season, just how good of a guy Lancelot is. And then the next season, I thought, I'm sorry, scene, where actually the scene on the Isle of the Blessed, while the feast is going on, you've got Morgana and Morgoth on the Isle of the Blessed, and when Morgoth keeps insisting that Morgana has to kill her, you see a little bit of, you see actually quite a bit of reluctancy out of Morgana. It kind of shows that she's not entirely evil. She cares about the people she loves, and you know she still thinks of Morgoth as a sister to her, and so you see she's still got some very humane qualities to her. You see she's not completely and utterly evil yet. You know what I mean? And finally, also I thought too, my third favorite scene was the scene between Arthur and Merlin towards the end when they're having their little dialogue before Merlin saves Arthur from the Dharaka. I think it was, they kind of used the whole classic, Merlin's an idiot, Arthur's a brat, but they could, but obviously they, they're kind of saying that in a joking way, but it has a lot deeper meaning. They're just kind of expressing how the other person is important in their life, and how like Aaron said, they really could have been good friends, and I think in the future they will be, after Merlin reveals himself and that sort of thing, because obviously their destinies are intertwined, and I think that this scene is kind of, confirming that. So that's how I felt. And then
In case anyone doesn't already know, and I'm sure you'll find out, Andrew's quite a Lancelot fan, so just throwing that in there. Go ahead, go ahead.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it. And then as far as the best actor, I actually thought Agravain, the actor, his name here is Nathaniel Parker. I thought he did a pretty good job, because until you saw that scene with Morgana, he had me like completely fooled. I thought he was just, another guy joining Arthur's crew, just being a good friend to Arthur and that sort of thing. And then I see him with Morgana. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. I thought he was a good guy, but and I think, since he's working for Morgana kind of undercover, I think that'll continue for the rest of the season. And I think he's doing a good job playing that, kind of deceiving, seemingly good person, but really, just kind of a pawn for Morgana type thing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I feel like you're right with
Yeah.
Agravain. People really hate him, especially as the series goes on. But the fact that Nathaniel Parker is able to do such a good job that makes people really feel that emotion to hate him
Yeah,
shows that he's really a good
exactly.
actor.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and
that's
from
it.
what I've read about him, he's like really good to work with on the set and everything. I hear that like he's really, really serious about his craft, but then like when he breaks down, apparently he's just like a 5-year-old kid. He just like giggles and giggles and giggles and doesn't stop,
Yeah.
which I think is funny because it's just such a strange thing to think from a character like Agravain that such a good guy would be playing him,
Yeah, and I think the performance is definitely a tribute to his acting talent, the fact that he's able to play such a deceptive character that you can get so angry at, that's he's definitely talented.
So I'm looking forward to seeing some more episodes of Agravain. I'm sure he'll be very frustrating to everyone, but I
Yeah.
think everyone will enjoy that. Okay, Courtney, you can go ahead.
Yeah, I really kind of thought I kind of agree with you, Aaron. I didn't really like the Darakas, not as like as plot wise. I mean, I thought plot wise they were good. I just like as a person watching it, I was really disturbed by it because, who wants a bunch of tortured souls chasing you around in the night? This wasn't one of my favorite scenes, but I did think it was like creepy and like hairs on my neck stood up a little bit when Merlin dropped the candle and it rolled into the dark corner, and then the curtain was like blowing. I was like so freaked out by it. But I was like such a girl, I like couldn't look. But Arthur called him out and was like, "What are you being like such a girl or something, Merlin?" But Arthur has a
Oh, yeah, that was
tendency
funny.
of doing that. That was funny.
Yeah.
But I thought just the deserted village was really, really creepy and haunting, especially when they found the, you know, the frozen bodies. That was really kind of disturbing.
Don't forget about the goat.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I can't even think about it. One of my favorite scenes was actually, it was just a little clip at the beginning, but I thought that it added a little bit of, lighthearted humor to it. When Merlin's walking through the kitchen to get Arthur's, laundry, and he, like, puts a hook on a chicken and sends it up through the vent where the knights are waiting. And then they're all, it's just like, I don't know, I just really liked that because I thought that it just showed like a little glimmer of camaraderie on their parts and shows that they're all kind of friends in the end and they have each other's backs, even though Merlin's like, exactly. I feel like they're just like funny guys and good guys. Yeah. And they're all pretty like down to earth for the most part. And then my other favorite scene was actually another just short thing, not even a big deal, but it was when the Gaelics appeared in Merlin's vision at the feast, and then he ended up passing out, because everyone else froze, and Merlin was just kind of alone there facing that, being the only one that can see it, and it kind of just shows, like, the duality of what he has to deal with, because from Arthur's point of view, Merlin just randomly passing out is kind of cowardly, so Arthur wouldn't really, like, understand, and he would probably call him out on something like that. But to Merlin, it's like he just had a really, really big, like, magical moment, and he can't really share it with Arthur, obviously, because he hasn't come out in that sense to Arthur yet. So I thought that was interesting. And then when Arthur is saying goodbye to Uther when he's going to go sacrifice himself on the Isle of the Blessed, that was, like, a really moving scene, in my opinion, because it just shows that Arthur is kind of willing to do anything for his people, including kind of, like, leave his father in this state to sacrifice himself. And I just think that that kind of shows that, like, Uther's time is passing. He's kind of a shell of his former self, and Arthur is really stepping into his own and taking responsibility for his position, and he's, like, ready to take the crown when his father, you know, passes. And I actually really liked Uther in this episode. I thought Anthony did a really great job of him just playing kind of a shell of Uther's former self and just kind of a very, like, disturbed character who's really lost everything. And then he just kind of has that fear in his eye when he asks Arthur to stay and not to leave him. But I like that. I mean, I thought that was obviously sad, but I thought Anthony had did a good job.
Absolutely. And through the first three seasons, I really, Uther, even though I hated him as a character, Anthony Head's an excellent actor.
Oh, yeah.
He did such a great job of just showing how, like, naive and how ignorant and just how hypocritical Uther was. And you get so frustrated with him at times because he'd be doing things, punishing people for magic after he'd used it himself. And you could just see the fear he had for magic and the regret he had.
Other times, though, sometimes maybe in his father's son scenes with Arthur, he didn't feel so bad. You know, he didn't feel so angry towards him. And of course, in this last scene, we saw him in season 4. He felt really poorly for him because, you know, he just had his heart broken by Morgana, that sort of thing. So he really did a good job with it.
And I think one of my favorite scenes ever between the two of them, Arthur and Uther, was after Morgoth took Arthur to that place to talk to his mother, and he found out the truth about how he was born, and then he went and attacked Uther. That was one of the most intense scenes, I think, of the whole series.
Yeah, I agree with
that. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it really bothered me when Merlin had to just stand there and tell Arthur that it was all a lie, because it really was the truth, but that was just such an intense scene. So, good choice on Anthony Head. That was definitely a good pick. So, overall, let's do ratings. 1 to 10. I would rate this episode an 8. What about you guys?
I'd say probably like a 7.5.
I don't know. I'd probably give it a solid 8.5, I'd say. I thought it was pretty good.
8.5. All right. So we'll have to keep track of our ratings and see what our top rated episodes end up being. But it's a good little variety of ratings there. So overall, yeah, it was a good episode. Good way to start out the season, and we're looking forward to part two, clearly, so we can find out what happens with Merlin and what happens with Camelot, because obviously there's going to have to be a sacrifice. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. To finish the show off, we have two fun little segments to play, just for some entertainment. The first one is called Trouble in Camelot. What we're going to do is I'm going to come up with a situation for each of our other hosts, and it's going to be as if they were in Camelot during this time. I'll give them a situation and they have to come up with a solution to their problem. So, who wants to go first?
Ladies
Andrew
first.
can go first.
Andrew.
All
Okay.
right. Okay.
All right. So, here's your situation, Andrew. You are just a regular citizen of
Oh, I
Camelot.
don't
You're
get.
not poor, but
I'm not a
you're
Kniga?
not a noble. I'm sorry. No. You're just walking around Camelot. And you come across this strange little thing.
Little
What you don't
thing.
know is a little time portal opened up about 5 minutes ago and dropped a firecracker and a lighter on the ground. So you stumble across this firecracker and this lighter, and you pick it up and you decide to light it off right in the middle of Camelot. You're like, oh, what's this lighter do? So you start the lighter up and you see it's got a flame, and then you see this little fuse on this firecracker, so you figure you might as well try it out. So you light it and it goes off. And everyone in Camelot looks at you like, what just happened? And shortly word gets to King Uther that little Andrew has been using magic in Camelot.
Oh boy.
So Uther calls you to the court, and you are sentenced to execution.
Oh no.
The next day, you're thrown down in the prison cells. You're to be executed in 24 hours publicly. You have no magical ability, and the only thing in your cell is a toothpick, a cape, a bowl, and
A bowl?
a copy of Reader's Digest.
Copy of Reader's Digest. Okay. So what'd I do?
Medieval edition. Medieval edition of Reader's
Ooh.
Digest.
Ooh.
So what would you do?
Alright. Well, okay. First of all, being a fireman and this being a fire hazard, I don't think I'd be in this situation in the
Oh,
first
man.
place. But assuming I am, I'd have to say,
Just a little plug for yourself.
Okay, well, if picking the lock with a
Continue.
toothpick didn't work, I'd probably give up right there and maybe just, enjoy some Reader's Digest before I die. If I was lucky and maybe the guards, were kind of dumb like they sometimes are in the first few seasons we've seen, I'd probably take maybe knock them out with a bowl or something like that, kind of break it over their head and maybe just make a run for it and probably escape through the sewer system that people always seem to be able to get through. So yeah, that'd probably be my solution.
That's a good answer. I'm glad you were able to just come up with that off the whim. Okay. Courtney, here's one for you. You are a princess from a faraway kingdom, and your king sent you to Camelot because there were two knights there that he believed would suit you. So you go along and you end up meeting Lancelot and you end up meeting Gawain, and you take a liking to both of them.
Choose Lancelot.
Shortly after that, you're traveling down the road with them, and your carriage gets attacked by some bandits, and the bandits take both Lancelot and Gawain. They tell you what's going to happen. They tell you that they're taking them to two separate locations, and in 5 hours, each of them will be executed. So they leave you to go. Not really sure why, but they just do. So you head back to Camelot, and you get to Uther. You tell him what happened. Or no, before you tell him what happened, you find out that Camelot only has enough men to save one of these two. So, my question to you is, which one of these two knights are you going to tell Uther is about to die? Who's going to live and who's going to die?
Oh no. Well, I'm gonna have to agree with Andrew. I think that Lancelot is a pretty stand-up knight. And with a little bit of foresight, I could tell that his life is probably worth saving. And he, obviously, his name is just really well known in Arthurian legend, and that means he's absolutely amazing, and he's really attractive, and I would be a shallow enough princess that I would just choose him because Gawain's hair is too long. So.
No.
Oh, ouch.
You wouldn't try to save both of them, maybe just kind of hire Merlin on the side, to go after Gawain with his, his little magic, his
That's not
sleep.
an option.
Oh, that isn't.
I mean,
Never mind. No, you
if
have
I
to
could
only.
like, if I could recruit the one that I did save to save the other one, I would do that. But I don't know. I mean, if Camelot
Now,
just doesn't have enough manpower to go after both, I would have to pick Lancelot.
are we assuming there's any, are there any great dragons for rent here that you could use to save the other one, or no?
No,
Okay.
it's really just a Dark Knight situation. It's one or the other.
I see.
Ugh. Man, wish
Right,
I
I
could just
just
have
that was kind
both.
of a way of finding out who Courtney's true interest and actor was.
Okay. I
Yes,
get you.
I'm just like Gwen. I have a soft spot for Lancelot. So does Andrew. He's such a
Oh man.
dreamboat.
Yep.
Oh man. All right, so do either of you have a nice little situation you can throw at me?
Let me think. Huh.
All right, you do that. Go ahead.
Okay, Aaron,
Bring it on.
I've got one for you. All right, you are one of Arthur's Kinnegets. You are traveling through the forest of Albion.
Is that your way of saying knight?
Yeah, did you ever watch Monty Python when you were a
You're
kid?
such a clown.
Okay.
Yes, I watched
All
Monty
right.
Python.
Okay.
You just need to clarify for
All
everyone.
right. Okay, so knights, for people who haven't watched Monty Python, because it's one of the oldest movies out there. Anyway, so
I've
you're
never
one
seen
of.
it.
God. Okay.
Whew, that's
Anyway.
rough, Courtney.
So you're one of Arthur's knights, to clarify, and you're riding through the mountains of Albion. Suddenly, you are attacked by a rogue mage. And he kills your horse. He not knocks you off.
Oh no.
Fortunately,
No.
you were smart enough to bring a crossbow, and you kill him. But unfortunately for you, the great dragon happened to be hovering overhead, and he just saw you kill a mage, and he doesn't like it when you kill magical beings very much. And so he's currently diving down towards you, about to torch
Oh
you.
no.
And all you have at your supply is your big red cape, a bucket of water, and you're not a dragon lord, so you can't, talk him down. So, what are you gonna do?
I still have my crossbow, right?
Oh yeah, good memory there. You still have it.
Okay. So this is what I would do. I would take that bucket of water, I would soak the cape. Once the cape was soaked, I would tie that soaked cape to the last arrow that I had. I would set it in the crossbow. I would take aim, and right as the dragon opens his mouth up to breathe his fire on me, I'd shoot it right in there. And that cape that's soaked would act as a nice little cover over that fire, and it's just gonna clog his throat up, and it's just gonna ruin his fire breathing ability. And when it's just like, once someone loses their favorite possession, once a dragon loses his ability to breathe fire, he has no more self-confidence.
Huh.
So that dragon just decides to take off, and he's lost his manhood, so he's gone.
I see. I see. Oh, hey,
Yeah.
good
Poor
choice.
dragon.
That's a good answer.
Oh, a little bit of a stretch,
I'm
but.
hoping the crossbow's strong enough to carry a huge drenched cape, but we'll assume it is for humor's sake.
Oh, it is.
Okay.
I'm hoping that you have good aim.
Okay.
All
That
right.
was very interesting. So, the second segment we have is called Pick an Actor or Actress. So what I'm gonna do is give you a character from Merlin, and you're gonna come up with an actor and actress that would be funny or an awesome person, an American actor or actress, that would be, you know, an interesting twist on that character if they played that character. So the first one I'll do is for Andrew. Pick an actor to play Lancelot.
Lancelot, huh? Well, if only I'd done a little bit of acting back then, but I didn't. let me think. I would have to say, I'm not sure if I have an answer for you, because I really like that one, the one they have right now, and I can't really think of any younger male actors that would really do a great job replacing him.
Really?
Yeah. But I'm still thinking. Why don't you go to Courtney and then come back to me, and hopefully I'll have an answer for you by then.
All right, you think about that, Courtney. Courtney, pick an actress to play Morgana.
Oh, okay. I actually have one. I think that Angelina Jolie could be a good Morgana. Because, I don't know, I think that she gives off a really dark vibe, and I'm actually not a huge fan of her as an actress in general, but I do think that she kind of gives off kind of angry, bitter waves of resentment. And, aggression.
That would be a very interesting one.
Yeah, I think so.
Good choice, though. Andrew, do you have a answer for me?
Let me think. Okay, if I absolutely had to choose, you know, I like the one they have now, but if it was down to, you know, a famous young male actor who'd do a good job playing him, and no, I'm not a Twilight fan, before anyone asks, but I'd have to say Taylor Lautner.
Oh no!
Oh my gosh.
What?
Are you serious?
Alright, but in my defense, I did just kind of Google famous young male actors 2011. He was one of the first ones that popped up.
Of course you would. Oh man, Taylor Lautner is Lancelot. That's an interesting one. All right. Why don't one of you guys give me one?
All right.
I'll do my best.
If you had to pick a young actress to play Guinevere, who would you choose?
Now, this is an interesting one, because a lot of people kind of don't like the current Gwen.
I think she does a good job.
Because...
Yeah,
I do, too. I'm a fan, but when you look at Arthurian legend... Guinevere is supposed to be this girl that's, like, highly sought after. She's kind of like a Helen of Troy. She's, like, this prized woman, this beautiful, gorgeous woman that just is...
Steals your breath
away. Why Lancelot's after her. Yeah. Yeah, so, and a lot of people... I mean, it's really up to the eye of the beholder, but a lot of people just feel that she's not attractive enough to play Guinevere. I think she does a great job, but some people just... aren't happy with her. I was reading on the Merlin forums, people have, you know, their dislikes about the show, and that was like one of the major ones. And some people were really bashing her. It was pretty mean, but
wow.
I think she does a good job. I mean, I do agree that there are some very attractive actresses that probably could do a better job, but as far as their casting, I don't think it was that bad of an idea. But if I had to pick an American actress to play her, I would probably go with Queen Latifah.
What?
Oh, I'm just kidding.
Are you serious?
Although, can you imagine that? Sorry.
Dude, that was worse than my answer. Funny. Are you kidding me?
I'm just kidding.
I'm just kidding.
Let's see here. Oh. I would have to go with, man, this is tough. I'm trying to think of who's just really beautiful.
Hey, I'll give you a hint. She's going to Brown.
Oh, I thought Emma it was Watson. Her, too.
All right, there we go. Actually, that's a good one.
Okay, perfect.
I'm going to have to say Emma Watson, because Emma Watson is beautiful, and obviously she's got some experience acting in the magical world.
Oh, yeah.
Even though she's not an American actress.
Oh, true. Anyway. Very true. That was my mistake.
It's either her
Well, I don't know.
It's all right. It's all right.
She's studying in America, so.
Oh, that's okay. True. Loopholes.
We'll call her an American. She's an American student. Close enough.
Yeah.
If not, I'd have to pick Keira Knightley, but she's English too, so.
Oh, if I don't know. I'm more of a Natalie Portman person, but, you know, to each his own.
Here we go.
Oh, they all look so similar. Well, okay.
I don't know about that.
Well, okay. Well, whatever. No, I can see that. All three of those, I think, would be good options.
Okay. Well, that was also a good little segment. Jeez. So, I think it's about time to wrap up this show.
Jeez, before we're almost an hour right now.
Yeah, I know. A couple reminders before we go. We actually have a website now. It's www.merlincast.blogspot.com. You can go there, and it has all our episodes. It has all our latest news. And it's our big link, basically. We didn't have a website before. For episode one, when we did that, we didn't have a website yet. But now we do. So go. Feel free to check out that website. We also have a Twitter. It's @TheMerlinCast. Go ahead and follow us there. We're always up to date and always talking about what we're doing, if we're recording, when the next episode's coming out, stuff like that. We have a Facebook page. Just search MerlinCast and you should be able to find it. Feel free to like us there. And we're also getting our name out in all of the major podcasting directories. We're available on iTunes now. That's a big one. So please subscribe to us on iTunes. If you're listening to us, there's a good chance you already have, but it'd be awesome if you did. And feel free to write us a review on the bottom if you'd like to, because we'd love to hear your feedback. Our email is themerlincast@gmail.com. Shoot us an email with any questions you have, any comments about the show. And we're still looking for another host. If anyone's interested, feel free to send us in an email explaining your interest in the show and your availability to do it with us. And maybe we can get you on the show. Can anyone else think of any other networking sites I'm forgetting about?
No, I think you've covered them all.
No? All right. So make sure you keep up to date with us. And our next episode will be coming out following this Friday's episode of Merlin, which is The Darkest Hour Part 2. And we look forward to podcasting for you guys then. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.